Welcome to another exclusive feature of The Brief for our Patreon subscribers. Nora speaks with Aziz Fall, an author, activist, and filmmaker who teaches at McGill and UQAM in Montreal. He is a founding member of GRILLA, the Group for Research and Initiative for the Liberation of Africa. Several years ago, GRILLA created an international team of 22 lawyers to make a case for the full investigation into the assassination of Thomas Sankara. Much of the legal research and drafting was spearheaded by Quebec lawyers under Mr. Fall's coordination. 34 years after the assassination of the revolutionary Burkina Faso president Thomas Sankara, a trial began in October 2021 in the capital of Ouagadougou for 14 people said to be involved in the 1987 plot. Although not Blaise Compaoré, the main beneficiary of the coup, who took power in Burkina Faso and later fled under protected exile to Côte d'Ivoire, where he remains today. Aziz points out that he is not attending the trial because Blaise Compaoré is not at the trial.
I have refrained from going to the trial myself as a symbolic gesture. As long as he's not sitting in the box, I will not be there.
Compaoré was Sankara's close comrade, brother-in-arms, and he had betrayed him and the revolution. And he tried to appease the imperialists by undoing Sankara's policies. And he is the main suspect in the assassination. Nora speaks with Aziz Fall about the struggle for the trial of the assassination of Thomas Sankara.
Aziz Fall, thank you so much for being with us on The Brief today.
Thanks for having me.
The trial began this past October, 34 years after Thomas Sankara's murder. It's still ongoing in Burkina Faso as we speak. What's your reaction to what's happened so far in the courtroom?
Well, many mixed feelings. As you know, this is an ongoing campaign for the past 25 years. So it's not our first trial. The only difference is that we are no longer fighting against the state party. We are actually, for the first time, considered in a more respectful way. It was quite a big difficulty to set up a team of judges. Most of them were reluctant to be chosen. Finally, we had a team and the trial started. One of the disappointments was that they refused to record the trial. But so far, the trial began before the trial chamber of the military tribunal of Ouagadougou. They relocated in a very fancy banquet hall in Ouaga 2000. And 14 defendants are actually tried. Most of them are released, so they're free of their movement. They just have to appear every day. Blaise Compaoré and Yacine Kafondo are tried for state security, murder, concealment of corpse, attack on state security. They have been exfiltrated in Ivory Coast after the famous revolution 4 years ago. And the rest are all indicted. We are speaking of Gilbert Diendéré for complicity in murder, attack on state security, and at least 13 other fellows who all have actually mostly denied their involvement. You can really see and feel a mix of fear and among themselves, like who is going to talk the first. And so far, they mostly deny the charges and while contradicting and really showing they were part of that plot.
Aziz Fall, tell us about the process that brought this trial forth and your work with Sankara's family, the Group for Research and Initiative for the Liberation of Africa, which has put together a team of more than 20 lawyers to get Sankara's assassination trial off the ground. This has been a campaign for a long-awaited justice for him and the 12 other victims who were killed with him in 1987. Can you talk about your work after so many years of no one being held accountable for the assassination?
Yes, indeed. Well, from 1987 to 1997, we have been mobilizing and doing many events commemorating on each 15th of October. It happened to be that the Group for Research and Initiative for Liberation of Africa is born the same year than the Burkina Faso Revolution in 1984, which actually was just an accident and a big opportunity to also follow a state that actually was trying to implement our most dear dreams, which is basically a Pan-African self-reliant development. So when Thomas Sankara and his comrade were assassinated, we've been, you know, doing a lot of work, trying to sensitize people on the issue and educate people on the question of impunity and so on. But when we start reaching 1997, actually, it was nearly at the period of the expiry year status of limitations, meaning that if the family would not lodge a complaint, the case would be closed. So we had a meeting at Grilla where we all convinced that we have to do something. I have also to mention that, you know, we have many of our forefathers, Amilcar Cabral, Lumumba, were killed in total impunity. So for us, it was a big bitterness that things would just, you know, fall in the traps. So this is how the case was, in fact, started. Mariam Sankara lodged a complaint. Dieudonné Kunku, unfortunately, one of our first lawyers who passed away, another lawyer called Benoende Sankara, had the courage, you know, to endorse and start the process. And that was for a willful forgery of an administrative document saying that Thomas Sankara died of natural death. And then, you know, we started the process. We deposit 1 million franc in accordance to the criminal procedure. And then what was quite interesting is that at the time when the killing happened, Blaise Compaoré was the justice minister. He was not just the best friend of Thomas Sankara, but was the justice minister. He did nothing during almost those 10 years, but actually tried to instrumentalize the judiciary. The public prosecutor of Burkina Faso submitted a request to contest the jurisdiction of the ordinary court on the ground that these alleged events happened in the military component. And then another very courageous judge called Alexis Cambiré decided on the contrary that the Tribunal of Grand Instance of Ouagadougou was very competent to investigate the court. So the judge ordered that we should proceed. We spent years and years going from a court to another, and they actually intimidate people. They try to sabotage most of what we have been doing. And we spent nearly 5-6 years until we realized, okay, that they will really jeopardize all of our effort. They had made the mistake of signing the international covenant at the United Nations Human Rights Committee. So that's where we lodged also a complaint that was accepted. And on March 2003, for the first time, Burkina Faso acknowledged that Thomas Sankara did not die of a natural death. We were very fortunate at the 80s session in New York in April 2004, the United Human Rights Committee found the communication against Burkina Faso admissible. So there, they start to be very nervous. They were, you know, obliged to follow with interim measures, and the case became more and more known on the international level. And in 2006, the Human Rights Committee recognized our rights against the state party. And that was a major blow in for the whole African continent, or even in the United Nations system, showing that the committee showed that the domestic remedies must be available for the family, and that they have violated their right, and to show that the refusal to conduct an investigation into the death of Thomas Sankara, the failure to rectify the death certificate, constitute an inhuman treatment of Mrs. Sankara, and that this family has a right to know the circumstances of his death, and the refusal to conduct an inquiry into the death of Thomas Sankara constitute also an inhuman treatment. That is the part that become more and more obvious in our side, that we were slowly winning the battle. Unfortunately, international law is not that well organized. You know, impunity, we don't have a real covenant on impunity. And this committee doesn't really have binding risk courses. So soon some of these experts were invited in Ouagadougou. I'm not saying that they were corrupted, but easily some of them sided with the government, saying that, well, the Human Rights Committee didn't retain the right of inquiry and demanded compensation and recognition of the burial site. So they said, here is the burial site, it is known. And then there was even another interesting thing that the government offered $65,000 for the family. And they made a mistake that there was like an extra zero that was written, which will read $650,000, which is immense for a small state like that. And despite of the fact that we rectified that number, the expert played like they have never seen that mistake in the number and then consider that they will no longer consider this matter further under the follow-up procedure. So we were almost back to square one. Meanwhile, at The Hague, Charles Taylor, who was cross-examined by the criminal court in The Hague, started recognizing that he and some other people were involved into a bigger plot. So we start collecting the DNA of the children to have a chance of having the body exhumated. At that time, they tried to sabotage the presumed tomb by crushing it and by spilling liquids on the tomb to sabotage any attempt of DNA identification. We even at one point start another inquiry trying to seek whether Thomas Sankara was not in a hidden prison. What proved that he was really dead and why is it not somewhere hidden in one of your gloomy prisons? And that was another procedure, you know, to gain momentum, etc. And then in June 2013, started wave of demonstration because Blaise Compaoré was trying to change the constitution and be elected at the 2015 presidential election. At that time, a new desecration of the presumed tomb of Thomas Sankara also happened. We requested a bailiff for the second act of vandalism of the president's grave while liquid were spilled. So all of that probably have played a lot in what will happen later. So in 2014, after the overthrow of Blaise Compaoré, who was exfiltrated by France in Ivory Coast, the Tribunal of Grand Instance of Ouagadougou finally accepted our DNA expertise to confirm the grave of Thomas Sankara. And then we had contradictory process, but we can really see that our case were progressing. And I must tell, we were like 22 lawyers in the beginning. The team shrinked. We lost three lawyers, Maître Dieudonné Kunku, Maître Kimon Kling, Maître Charles Roach, who all passed away, unfortunately. We have earned other people in this team. And finally, we started witnessing major change. One of the things is that they didn't find any genetic material taken from the remain of the dozen victims of October 15. Apparently, the forensic investigation showed that the body were too degraded. We did ask different techniques. They didn't follow our advice. They didn't follow for a second opinion. We recommended international laboratory who are independent in this process. They did it on their way. Then they started with another laboratory with Luis Conchero Institute of Forensic Sciences in Santiago de Compostela. And at the same time, as President Macron went to France, we obtained a commission rogatoire, which is like a judge in France who would also investigate and help us declassify some of the hidden document of France. So in 2018, we start receiving two lots of French Ministry Foreign Affairs and Defense material. Those material, unfortunately, were clearly selectively done. So you can really see that they try to hide things. Meanwhile, the investigating Judge Yameogo have indicted 22 people. Many of these people sometimes have died and end up being just the 14 that I mentioned earlier. And then while we were waiting for the third lot of declassified documents, they arrived too late as the judge was really fed up and he closed the case. So we call this in French disjunction, meaning that they will actually detach the local plot from the international plot, and another judge is appointed to follow up on the what we can call the international plot. So this is really briefly 25 years of efforts that we have done with all our teams and many people helping us.
That was Aziz Fall. For more information, check out www.gorilla.org, G-R-I-L-A.org. Aziz is coordinator for the legal team representing the Sankara family. And for our full episode on Thomas Sankara, you should head over to The Brief, episode 24, where we discuss his revolutionary life and legacy. It's available wherever you get your podcasts. And thanks so much again to our sustainers for keeping this show going. We appreciate it. See you next time.